President Obama was back in Iowa yesterday visiting a wind turbine blade manufacturer to talk about wind energy tax credits. What is the future of wind energy in the state? This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. In the first half hour, we'll talk with Rob Hawk, a wind energy businessman from Alta, who sat down to talk with the president. We'll also hear from a critic of wind energy tax credits, then environmental advocate Philip Warburg. His new book, Harvest the Wind, looks at the impact of wind energy on declining rural communities. That's all coming up this hour after we get wind of the latest news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Yesterday, President Barack Obama was back in Iowa during an official visit to TPI Composites, a manufacturer of wind turbine blades in Newton. The president called on Congress to extend tax breaks for wind energy.
This industry, thanks in large part to some very important tax credits, has now taken off. The state of Iowa now gets nearly 20% of all your electricity from wind. 20%. Overall, America now has enough wind capacity to power 10 million homes. So this is an industry on the rise. And as you know, it's an industry that's putting people to work. You know this firsthand. There are more wind power jobs in Iowa than any other state. That's a big deal.
President Obama speaking yesterday in Newton at TPI Composites, a manufacturer of wind turbine blades in Newton. In just a moment, we'll talk with a critic of the wind energy tax credits. But first of all, I welcome Rob Hawk. He is the founder and president of Anemometry Specialists in Alta, Iowa, in the northwest part of the state. And Rob Hawk, welcome to our program.
Thank you.
And I learned a new word today because before today I did not know what anemometry meant, the name of your company. It is the science of measuring the speed of the wind, and that is your business. Tell us about it.
We started our company in 2002, shortly after I was working for a company called Enron. And after Enron, I didn't want to move away from our small little town. I have grandpa and grandmas on both sides here. Married a fantastic farmer girl, and we decided to stay in our small little town.
Mm-hmm.
But our company started in 2002 after Enron, and we've grown successfully over the last 10 years.
So tell us what Anemometry Specialists in Alta does. How do you fit into the wind energy industry?
We provide the feasibility studies for the wind farms. So in order for a bank to put up the lending and an equity partner to put up the equity, there needs to be a feasibility report that we provide to those customers and to those clients.
Okay, so this is in any given part of the state, in any square mile of the state, you're going to be able to say how often it blows, how strong it blows, that kind of thing.
Correct. That's correct.
Okay, and we know that northwest Iowa is the north central Iowa is the king of wind in the state, right?
It is very windy in these parts of the area. That is correct.
Okay, so tell me, how many people does your company employ?
We have 28 employees. On Monday, we hired two interns.
Okay. How have the wind energy tax credits affected the growth of your company?
The uncertainty as to whether or not we're going to have a production tax credit at the end of the year is having a significant impact on our company. And a lot of decisions have been postponed or just postponed because we have no clue as to whether or not we're going to have work in quarter three or quarter four of this year, just because what we do is build out the pipeline for a wind development company. So it's significantly impacted our company.
Mm-hmm. So, and the president did mention exactly that aspect yesterday in Newton, some in Congress are saying, he says, this is an election year, let's wait till after the election. You're saying it's critical that it's done as soon as possible?
Right. And the president did say that it was important to do it now, not wait till after the election. I don't know if that's what you said, but yesterday when we were there, he wanted to make sure it gets done before the election, because the TPI, our company, and so many other companies, Acciona, Siemens, that are here in the state of Iowa, without a steady supply of orders, they're going to have to go to layoffs. And, you know, sitting in that crowd of attendees in Newton yesterday, there's a lot of good, hardworking people there that are going to be on unemployment because of the lack of the PTC. So the president was dead on that we need to get the production tax credit extended now and not wait till after the election.
What if the tax credits would not be extended? What would be your prediction for your company and the wind industry?
We're a smart group of people, but it's going to be tough to be able to say that we won't lay off people. And it's really tough to be able to say that, it's a decision we've considered about laying off employees, and we probably have to lay off up to half of our company if we don't get the production tax credit. And for a town of 1,800 people, 14 employees is going to have a huge impact on our community.
Rob Hawk, founder and president of Anemometry Specialists in Alta, Iowa, Northwest Iowa. Rob, you wrote an opinion piece recently in the Des Moines Register in which you stated that even though you are a registered Republican, you are in favor of President Obama's policy on this, on the tax credits for the wind industry. Critics of the 10-year extension of the production tax credit say that it costs the U.S. Treasury an estimated $4.1 billion, that the credits are unnecessary, and that they subsidize green energy jobs but eliminate conventional jobs. How do you respond?
The eliminating conventional jobs is, in my opinion, untrue because of the fact that we still need other energy sources that are out there in the marketplace. Wind has never proposed that we're going to not need wind, oil or coal. It's a portfolio. If you buy stocks, you're not going to buy one stock in one company. You're going to want to have a portfolio of options, and that's the same thing with renewable energy. Is that we're proposing to be in a stock in that energy portfolio. We'll still need coal. We'll still need natural gas. We'll still need oil. It's part of the portfolio.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think is behind the opposition to the tax credits?
It feels like the oil companies are opposed to this in my reading of the articles, and so the oil industry has not been very supportive of us. We've done a lot of lobbying in order to meet personally in Washington. We've had a tremendous amount of support from Republicans and Democrats. It doesn't really seem like it is a party issue as much as it is an energy, fighting against energy issue, from my observation and my reading of numerous articles.
What about someone who makes the argument, well, this is a free market issue. Let the markets decide if wind energy can thrive, is a good industry. It doesn't need to be propped up this way. Let it go and the free market will decide.
If the free market wasn't subsidized across the board, that would be a fantastic idea. But every single energy source that I've ever read about, learned about, you Google oil industry, the subsidies for the oil industry, they're subsidized. You Google coal industry, they're subsidized. Nuclear, they're subsidized. The subsidies are a part of the energy in order to make energy affordable for consumers. So if the wind industry was going to not get the subsidies, the production tax credit, then we need to eliminate the tax, the subsidies for all other energy resources. There's 19, according to the statistics that I have, there's 19 subsidies for the oil industry alone, and many of them have been in place for the last 100 years.
What is the presumptive GOP nominee for president Mitt Romney saying about his wind energy policy?
I haven't seen anything on Mitt Romney's opinion of wind energy. I mean, it's not included. Mitt Romney is, I've read a lot of articles, Googled Mitt Romney and wind, and Mitt Romney, and nowhere does he support renewable energy, wind, solar. So all the jobs, my employees, 75,000 other employees are going to be, well, not all of them going to be out of work, but we're going to be significantly impacted by the lack of this production tax credit and Mitt Romney's opposition of wind and solar.
Rob Hawk, you sound worried about this.
I don't get a lot of sleep. I won't lie to you. I mean, I'm up late and up early every day. I'm out meeting customers every day. We have a sales force that goes out and meets with people. But it's something that I work with. 10 years of being running a company and sacrificing Christmases and birthdays with children.
If this tax credit is extended, the 10-year extension, what do you see as possibilities for wind energy in Iowa and specifically for your company?
Well, just one correction. I don't think the wind industry is asking for a 10-year from all the articles that I've read. We're not asking for a 10-year. We'd be absolutely elated for a 4-year extension. And, right now we would be happy with a 1-year extension in order to wait for the other side of the election if we had to. But 4 years, our turbines would be not requiring a subsidization from the turbine manufacturers that I've talked to 4 or 5 years, and we don't need a production tax credit anymore.
Okay, so that would be the length, 4 or 5 years, and you'd say you'd be off this subsidy as an industry.
Right. That's correct.
Okay, back in September, last September, Rob Hawk, you met with President Obama when he was swinging through the Midwest. He stopped in Gutenberg, I believe. What was the highlight of that meeting for you?
He was talking about small businesses. He sat down with 4 other business owners besides myself. And was asking us about what we needed in order to help us thrive in the economic environment that we're in right now. And so he and I talked about the production tax credit, and he gets it. He understands that we need that, obviously, when he reiterated that yesterday. So in order to help our company right now in this economic climate is that we just need the production tax credit.
Okay. Rob Hawk, founder and president of Anemometry Specialists in Alta, Iowa. Thank you very much for joining us for this portion of River to River. We appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Ben.
And we're talking about wind energy this hour, wind energy production in Iowa. We'd like to have your thoughts, your questions. Has your life or your livelihood been impacted by the growth of wind energy in Iowa? And, oh, it has grown, hasn't it? You just have to look at the landscape in northwest or north central Iowa to see that. Perhaps you live in an area of the state where the wind turbines have popped up across the landscape. Perhaps you see a downside for the development of wind farms. We'd like your opinions, your questions this hour. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Our email, we're also on Facebook. And you can give us a tweet if you'd like, IPR Talk. And as we discuss wind energy this hour, on the heels of President Obama's visit to the state yesterday, his stopover at a wind turbine blade manufacturer in Newton, it's a stopover in which he warned of the pending loss of wind energy tax credits if Congress doesn't act. Joining us now, David Kreutzer. He's a senior policy analyst with the Heritage Foundation, a conservative think tank in Washington. Welcome to our program, David.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
Okay, I wanted to play a little bit of clip of President Obama in Iowa yesterday during an official visit to TPI Composites, a manufacturer of wind turbine blades in Newton. The president called on Congress to extend tax breaks for wind energy.
So I'm here today because as much progress as we've made, that progress is in jeopardy. If Congress doesn't act, those tax credits that I mentioned, the ones that helped build up the wind industry, the ones that helped to bring all these jobs to Newton, Those tax credits will expire at the end of the year if Congress doesn't do anything. If Congress doesn't act, companies like this one will take a hit. Jobs will be lost. That's not a guess. That's a fact. We can't let it happen.
President Obama yesterday in Newton. David Kreutzer, give us your view on the extension of the tax breaks for wind energy.
Well, the tax breaks that subsidize any form of energy take money from somebody else that could also be using it to create jobs and build businesses. So the question is, you know, why wind? You know, why not something else? Why not let consumers make their own choices over what they're willing to pay for instead of having the government take it in tax money and give subsidies to the wind energy companies?
Our last guest, just on that point before you proceed, on our last guest pointed out that all forms of energy, oil, natural gas, receive subsidies in one form or another. So why let wind hang out there with no subsidy?
That's an extraordinarily misleading claim that they continually make. The fact that some people call something a subsidy doesn't make it a subsidy. The big one they talk about is something to get a little too wonky here is Section 199 tax deduction. And that's a deduction that goes to every manufacturer, so broadly defined that it includes music recordings, the New York Times, Microsoft, and, of course, regular manufacturers of windmills and solar panels and so on. What it does, instead of lowering the tax rate, which I don't know why they didn't do that, they gave everybody this deduction. For everybody but gas and oil, the deduction is 9%. So everybody else gets a 9% deduction. Oil and gas gets 6%, yet that's called a subsidy, and none of the others are. So it's not this $4 billion is grossly misleading. If you looked at the subsidy that wind gets, just in the production tax credit, that's about 40% of the wholesale price of electricity. If oil got a subsidy like that, they would be getting $40 or $50 per barrel in subsidies. They don't get anything close to that. There's some minor subsidies. I'd be happy to get rid of them. But it's not the $4 billion a year they talk about.
As we try to move to more renewable energy sources and also greater energy independence in the United States, isn't a sort of startup period of subsidies expected in 4 or 5 years, no more subsidies? And we're up with some of the leaders in the world in, as far as wind energy technology, right?
Well the leaders in the world are all collapsing their subsidies. Spain, Germany are getting out of it. Even China is backing off on their subsidies and where they're going with their energy. But this another grossly misleading concept is this somehow is going to help us with energy independence. Wind generates electricity. We have all kinds of fuels domestically to generate electricity. We do not have any problem whatsoever generating electricity with domestic fuel. We can do it with coal. We can do it with the now plentiful natural gas. We can do it some of it with nuclear. Oil produces less than 1% of the electricity, and it's in odd places that you're not likely to get rid of it. So if you're looking for oil energy independence, windmills have zero help. They don't do anything.
Nevertheless, the president pointed out yesterday that Iowa gets, in the meantime, 20% of its electricity from wind power. Isn't that a significant achievement?
Yes, a significant and costly achievement. I mean, you can subsidize enough people. You could have people generate electricity with riding bicycle generators, perhaps. That doesn't mean it's effective or a good idea. It costs a lot of money. Like I said, there's a 40% roughly subsidy given on the production side. There's a 30% advanced energy manufacturing credit. So if you build $100 worth of windmills, you get to deduct $30 to get it from the government. It only costs you $70. If you sell $50 worth of wind energy, they give you a $20 subsidy. So on net, you get $70. So something that would cost $100 to produce and have a value of $50 just straight out breaks even with all these subsidies. That doesn't mean it's a good idea. It wastes $50 to do that.
So how do you see, ideally, the role of the government in fostering wind energy?
Well, it depends. If wind energy is a good idea, if it's cost effective, you don't need any policy. That is, it will, the people will be able to generate electricity at a cost that's competitive with other sources. Now, we have, research going on, fundamental university level type research that the government's funded, and you can make a good argument for that. What you can't make a good argument for is subsidizing commercial ventures, which is what we're doing with these production tax credits and the advanced energy manufacturing credit.
What do you say to the people listening now in this state or outside of this state whose jobs in the meantime depend on wind power. Iowa, as the president pointed out, has more wind power jobs than any other state. What do you say to those listening whose job may depend on the extension of those tax credits?
You know, what I say is, hey, there are other people in the country that have jobs that depend on getting money, that depend on how low or how high their taxes are. And if we have to raise their taxes and kill their job so that you can have your job, they're producing something that's viable, that people are willing to pay the full cost for. It doesn't make sense to take money from them to subsidize a job somewhere else that produces a product that's worth less than the cost of the inputs. And I'm not sure that all those jobs are going to disappear. But if they are, then that's simply a sign that, you know, they're not effective at cost effective at producing their output.
What about the good of having a source of power that does not contribute to greenhouse gases? You mentioned oil, natural gas could be used in greater abundance for electricity. But here we have a thriving industry that would need. Proponents say it needs some subsidies for a few years, but does not produce any greenhouse gases.
Okay, it needs subsidies for a few years, and they've been saying that for a lot of years. So you have to take that with a huge bit of skepticism that they're really not going to need subsidies after 4 or 5 years. They almost certainly will. We've seen when subsidies fall off in Europe, the industry falls way down. So they're in constant need of subsidies. If they're making a greenhouse gas case, they need to make that. But they're making the jobs argument that somehow this is a net jobs creator. And it's not a net jobs creator. You don't create net jobs by driving up costs, by producing products whose value is less than the cost of production. Okay. Mm. So, yeah, if you want to talk about greenhouse gas, we can start talking about that. I think that then you have to get into the whole science debate on that.
Do you see this as a particularly partisan issue?
It's becoming less so. I mean, obviously, everybody in Iowa is going to support it, I think, Republican and Democrats, because there's a huge amount of subsidies flowing to Iowa right now. It tends to be, yes, Democrats are more in favor of subsidies for wind and solar than Republicans are, but it's probably more geographic than partisan.
Just less than a minute left. So give us your vision for America's energy future as it should be.
Well, what we see is America's energy future has been going pretty well when it's allowed to work. Our efficiency per dollar of GDP has improved about a third over the past 3 decades. So we are using energy more efficiently, more effectively, because it saves people money to do so. But it doesn't always save them money to save another kilowatt hour. And so that's where they get to make their balance. We see private initiative has developed new drilling technologies that have dramatically increased access to natural gas, which is likely to be replacing coal. And by the way, in the last decade, natural gas replacing coal has reduced CO2 emissions much more than all the CO2 emission reductions that came from solar and wind combined.
Okay, David Kreutzer, we're out of time for this segment of our program. Thank you for joining us, Senior Policy Analyst with the Heritage Foundation. David Kreutzer, thank you.
Thank you.
Continue discussing wind energy when we come back on River to River. We'd like to have your thoughts on wind energy, your questions. Perhaps your life or your livelihood has been impacted, has been changed by the growth of wind energy in the state. Do you live in an area where the wind turbines have popped up, across the landscape? 1-866-780-9100. When we come back, Philip Warburg will join us. He's just written a book titled Harvest the Wind, America's Journey to Jobs, Energy Independence, and Climate Stability. Stay tuned for more of our discussion about wind energy in Iowa here on River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. So nice to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer over the noon hour, and we're talking about wind energy this hour. Iowa, one of the leaders in the wind energy industry, also on the heels of President Obama's visit yesterday to the state. He had a stopover at a wind turbine blade manufacturer in Newton, a stopover in which he warned of the pending loss of wind energy tax credits if Congress doesn't act. Right before the break, we heard David Kreutzer of the Heritage Foundation saying that we don't need these subsidies. We shouldn't have these subsidies to prop up the industry. What are your thoughts on wind energy, your questions? Perhaps your life or your livelihood has been impacted by the growth of wind energy in Iowa. Do you live in the part of the state where wind turbines have popped up across the landscape? Do Do you see an upside, downside? Tell us which side you see. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk. My next guest is Philip Warburg. Warburg was president of the Conservation Law Foundation, New England's leading environmental advocacy group from 2003 to 2009. And before that, he ran the Israel Union for Environmental Defense in Tel Aviv and was an attorney at the Environmental Law Institute in Washington, D.C. He's just written a book titled Harvest the Wind, America's Journey to Jobs, Energy Independence, and Climate Stability. Philip Warburg, welcome to River to River.
Great to be on your show.
I don't know if you heard any of our last discussion, the last segment. I think you joined us later, but tell us your opinion on the tax credits. We heard from a representative of the Heritage Foundation. He says the U.S. should not subsidize. Hands off. Let the market decide whether wind energy will thrive or die. What is your opinion?
Well, I think we have to look at the overall context within which subsidies for wind have developed. We've been subsidizing energy technologies for many decades now. President Obama tried to knock out $4 billion a year in subsidies for the oil industry. Senate wouldn't let him do that. The wind industry is still getting off the ground, and it really does depend upon some federal support, modest federal support, to help it do so. So I think that the argument being made that we should knock out the subsidies for wind is really a fairly indulgent one vis-a-vis the fossil fuel and nuclear industries. I should add that the nuclear industry has benefited since the 1950s from a liability cap on reactor accidents of less than $500 million. And if you look at what's happened in Japan with the Fukushima disaster, you would know that tens of billions of dollars of damage have already been racked up, and I'm sure many more will be racked up. So that federal provision for the nuclear industry is a phenomenal boon to that industry. We could talk about many other benefits provided by the federal government to the fossil fuel and nuclear industries, but I think that we really have to look at the need to make a transition to a cleaner energy future, and wind power is a very central part of that future, and Iowa's leading the way.
Okay, Philip Warburg, tell us about, let's talk a little bit about your new book, Harvest the Wind. In that book, you look at how wind energy creates jobs, works towards energy independence, works towards a better climate. In several parts of your book, you touched on Iowa. Give us a survey of your perspective on wind energy development in our state.
Well, I think it's been wonderful to see that Iowa has really taken the lead on the state level and really on the local level. The Department of Economic Development has been very proactive in giving wind power greater prominence on the national level. Your governors, Branstad and before that Culver, have been very proactive in promoting pro-wind policies. Various local leaders like Mayor Chaz Allen in Newton and Dennis Jordan with the Cedar Rapids Chamber of Commerce and others have really gone out there and sought to bring new industries to their localities, and that's been very important and has met with considerable success. What you see in Newton, Iowa, for example, with two major wind companies coming in is a huge job infusion for a town that was really bereft when Maytag pulled out several years ago. The Clipper Turbine Works in Cedar Rapids has also been a major job booster for that locality, and there are several other wind-dedicated factories in places like Fort Madison with Siemens coming in. And you really can sense Iowa's leadership in this area by looking at the overall percentage of power that now comes from wind. About 19% of your power right now comes from wind. That places Iowa second only to South Dakota, which has about 22% of its power coming from wind. If you look at where the federal government sees wind power going, the Department of Energy in 2008 produced a study called Wind Power in America's Future, 20% by 2030. As that title suggests, the Department of Energy anticipates that we could be getting a fifth of our overall national power needs from wind. And the head of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, John Wellinghoff, when I spoke with him in 2010, referred to getting half of our electricity from wind by the middle of this century if we were to invest in a smart grid infrastructure that would allow us to accommodate wind power and other renewable resources.
Your opinion about wind power, excuse me, Philip, wind power for our listeners, you have a question or a comment for Philip Warburg, Harvest the Wind, his new book, 1-866-780-9100. I'm sorry, I interrupted you, Philip.
No, that's fine. That's fine.
In your book, you point out, too, another benefit to Iowa is that, of course, when you have all these wind generators, windmills on the landscape, they need to be not only erected but also maintained. You point to Iowa Lakes Community College with campuses in Algona, Emmitsburg, Estherville, Spencer, and Spirit Lake.
Yes. Iowa Lakes is a wonderful example of a school that came in early and recognized that wind power offers a very promising career for people. People who might have lost their jobs in the construction industry, people who might have retired from the military, people who are just looking for an exciting new career to come in on the ground floor of. And it's really regarded as one of the leading educational institutions in the country for training wind technicians. You've got many wind turbines that require ongoing TLC to keep them running for the decades that they're intended to run for, and you're blessed with a training program there, and also Kirkwood Community College is doing its part, and University of Iowa, its engineering department, is also very dedicated to advancing wind technology. So the state is really at the forefront of pushing wind-related jobs training.
We heard earlier in the hour from the founder and president of a company, a small company, about 30 people employed at anemometry specialists in Alta, Iowa, and they measure wind as part of the wind energy industry. So very much waiting to see if this tax credit extension will continue. So does this affect the other ones you just mentioned in terms of training technicians? Is everybody in the wind energy industry holding their breath?
Yeah, we're already seeing cutbacks in the workforces of various manufacturing plants in the United States and overseas because of the anticipation that the production tax credit at the federal level may be cut out. What we're seeing right now is a dramatic drop in the price of natural gas, and we're all familiar with the fracking frenzy that is going on to extract more and more natural gas. Natural gas is not a clean-burning fuel. It produces very substantial carbon emissions, so it's a big piece of the problem, not as big as coal, but certainly not a carbon-free technology. The federal production tax credit will really help keep our wind industry moving forward and will keep jobs in the industry. The American Wind Energy Association estimates that of the 78,000 or so people employed directly by the wind industry today, about 38,000 of those jobs might be knocked out if the production tax credit is not renewed. And I should just mention that the production tax credit is probably costing taxpayers about $1 billion a year. Again, contrast that with the $4 billion a year that President Obama hoped to eliminate for the oil industry and the many other subsidies that go to the oil, gas, and nuclear industries. And I think it's a good investment in our energy future and a good investment today in American jobs.
Philip Warburg is with us. Harvest the Wind, his book. Let's go to our phones. Alan has been waiting in Hubble to join our conversation. Hi, Alan.
Hi.
Yes, go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome to our program.
Well, welcome. I got a very big dilemma because I had bought a home and I was a city employee. And basically, my supervisors put me in a dilemma that if I don't take the wind generator down because it serviced the house, that I will lose my job and my benefits. Well, so I had to take it down, and then my bill went from $40 a month to $200 a month. Now, I think that the governments need to get out of all these wind turbines that you see. I love them, but they need to put them to practical use and pass the savings into the homeowners and into the community.
Okay, Alan, you have a private.
I had a private wind generator up when I bought the house. I was forced to take it down or lose my job.
Okay, perhaps Philip Warburg has a perspective on your situation, Philip.
Well, I don't know the specifics of that situation. It sounds lamentable. I don't know why you were asked to take the turbine down. There is certainly potential at the household scale to be developing wind power, and that is happening a great deal in Iowa, and there's some great tax incentives for homeowners to do that. The real macro gains from wind technology are at the commercial wind farm level, where we're seeing very large wind farms go up that are producing power on a scale equivalent to our current coal-fired and gas-fired power plants. And that's where we're going to be able to see a real shift away from fossil fuel-dependent power production to cleaner energy technology. So I think there's a need to develop wind at all of those levels, but the real game changers, I think, are happening at the commercial scale.
Jerry is joining us from Pleasant Valley. Welcome to our program, Jerry. What's on your mind?
I'd like to ask Mr. Harburg if he knows if we have reached our capacity for wind energy. I was under the impression that there were no new wind farms built in Iowa, I think, in 2011. Maybe he knows more about that.
Are we still growing, Philip?
Yes. The potential for increasing wind power is enormous. An entity, a government research lab called the National Renewable Energy Laboratory, has done a study called Wind Powering America, and you can go online and take a look at its wind maps and its state-by-state projections as to the potential of each state for wind power development. It has looked at and has cataloged what it calls windy areas, which are areas with 4.6 miles per hour or greater of average annual winds. And looking at those areas and subtracting those areas where there might be national parks or human settlements or wetland areas, it projects that wind power could be providing about 10 times our current total power needs in this country. If you look at offshore wind potential, that increases the overall potential considerably. So we are very, very, very far from tapping out our wind resources. We're now getting about 3.5% of our wind, of our electricity nationwide from wind.
Philip Warburg, Harvest the Wind is his latest book, America's Journey to Jobs, Energy Independence, and Climate Stability, with us for this half hour. Address, Philip, please, some of the negative impacts that have been attached to wind energy, death of birds and bats, the noise, the visual impact on the landscape that bothers some people.
Well, let me start with the visual. On my bulletin board in my office, I have a cartoon that shows people log jammed on a highway, an eight-lane highway with street signs and traffic lights and sitting in the pollution caused by those cars. And on the distant horizon are three wind turbines, and a little bubble is coming out of one of the cars, and it says, just look at those eyesores. I think that we have a very distorted view of, literally, of what wind power is doing to our horizon. And I think, you know, we've become accustomed to all kinds of visual intrusions on our daily lives. And somehow some people feel that wind power is beyond what we can tolerate. And I think that it is part of a 21st century landscape, and we need to recognize the huge gains that wind power brings to us when we look at wind turbines and think about the ravaged landscapes from coal mining, for example, that we're sparing our ecosystem and our environment by relying upon wind technology, and think about the reduced risk of catastrophic damage such as been caused by the Fukushima power plant disaster, Chernobyl, and possibly future nuclear plant accidents. In terms of birds and bats, there are some very real concerns about wind turbines killing birds and bats. We have to be very careful about where we site these turbines so that we're not siting them in areas that are frequented by endangered species of birds or bats. The wind industry is becoming a lot smarter about how to site these turbines and also how to operate these turbines. So, for example, in certain areas where they're concerned about killing endangered bat species, specifically the Indiana bat, one of the wind companies is experimenting with turning the turbines off for 2 hours after sunset when bats tend to be hunting most actively for insects. They also turn them off during very low wind periods where they're not getting very much power out of the turbines anyway. And during low wind periods is exactly when insects are in the air and bats are hunting as well. So there are various technologies for reducing that risk. Also, radar is being used now to detect incoming flocks of birds in various places. And there was one wind farm in Bulgaria where the turbines were shut down 37 times in the course of 2 days while a flock of 30,000 white storks crossed through the wind farm area. Not a single white stork was harmed during that period. So, yes, it's a problem, but it's a problem that technology can help solve.
I guess noise was the other point that I would like you to address.
Noise is an issue if residential buildings are sited too close to turbines, and increasingly we're seeing states and localities be proactive in addressing that problem. The industry has grown up in a vacuum, in a sense, because there just has not been enough clear regulation of sound levels that are acceptable, and so you end up with neighbors being quite unhappy in some instances with the noise that they're hearing from their homes. But with smart siting, good regulation at the state level, good enforcement at the state and local level, that problem can be brought to an absolute minimum.
You mentioned Bulgaria. How does the United States compare with other countries in terms of development of wind energy? Are we at the forefront, in the middle of the pack, back of the pack?
We're very much toward the front of the pack. China right now has the largest amount of installed wind power. However, some of those wind turbines are not yet hooked up to the Chinese grid because there hasn't been good coordination between the building out of the transmission infrastructure and the commissioning of the turbines. And also a lot of those turbines are owned by state-owned enterprises, so their incentive to maximize productivity is not the same as the private companies and the utilities that own wind farms in America. So we're very, very close with China. Germany is right up there as well as a major user of wind power. Denmark gets fully a fifth of its power from wind, and it has a plan to remove all fossil fuels from its energy economy by 2050. And in doing so, it anticipates that it will be relying upon wind power for about 80% of its total power needs by that date.
Mm-hmm. All the countries you've mentioned, I'm sure that their governments have a large hand in fostering their wind energy industry. So there aren't any other cases in the world where wind energy has taken off without the help of government fostering?
Usually there are various kinds of incentives. They might be what are called feed-in tariffs that guarantee a minimum rate of return for wind-generated power. There might be locational incentives that are provided. One of the concerns right now in China is that it is so substantially subsidizing the wind industry that it is driving global prices down so that non-Chinese companies can't really compete. And for a number of years, China had what was called a local content requirement, so that any turbine built in China had to have 70% local content in terms of the value of the turbine and its technology. So that was a real disincentive to various companies importing from abroad. Many companies built their factories in China to get around that. They have now removed that restriction, but there is a real challenge that China is posing in the renewable energy sector in its competitive behavior in introducing its own technology into the global marketplace.
Philip Warburg, before we have to go, we have less than a minute. Tell us how you think this will play out politically with the tax credit extension in the coming year.
Well, we've had cliffhangers at several points in the past in terms of the production tax credit. I think it has expired 8 times since it was introduced in 1992, and often there's an 11th-hour decision, possibly after the November election, to renew the tax credit. I hope it does get renewed because the industry really is at a takeoff point and is making huge strides in improving the technology and improving the manner in which wind power is being sited in America. And it would be a shame if we lost all of those American jobs due to a very short-sighted decision not to renew a tax credit that has really proven itself to be very effective.
Philip Warburg, thank you very much. Harvest the Wind, the title of Philip Warburg's latest book, America's Journey to Jobs, Energy Independence, and Climate Stability. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
River to River is produced by Catherine Perkins and Alex Hoyer. Production assistance today by Emily Woodbury and Allison Sullivan. Technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. Our theme music is written and performed by the River Monks. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us. Have a great Memorial Day weekend.